Kibu Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. The deadline to apply for both of these positions is Monday, July 1st at midnight. More information can be found at kbu.fm/employment.
Hello, KBOO members. Thank you for being part of our amazing community. It takes all of us to manage this great community resource, and the role played by the KBOO Board of Directors is essential. Here's an opportunity for you to join the KBOO Board and become part of the team that is guiding our daily work and representing the interests and visions of all of our members. Please consider applying to become a KBOO board member if you want to help serve our community and put your gifts and talents to good use. There is a time commitment of about 15 hours a month for all board members, and you must be a KBOO member. To apply, go to kbu.fm and fill out an application, or stop by the station to pick up a paper copy. The deadline to apply is July 13th, 2019. We are looking for folks who love KBOO, who are committed to our community, and who want to carry forward KBOO's values of peace, justice, democracy, human rights, multiculturalism, environmentalism, freedom of expression, and social change. KBOO needs you. Apply today.
So this is just some history that I think has been written really nicely by people who are academics, and I read them and I appreciate the analysis and the history. And what about people who don't read socialist magazines? Like, can we get some of that? So the composite that I've developed over the years of just reading stuff and listening to others who told me this story over and over again. This is it. And it's very political. And housing is at the center. Police are at the center. Poverty is at the center. Music and culture is at the center. Organizing is at the center. Helping your community is at the center. So, like, thanks, because you're already there. So, New York City, 1969, Greenwich Village. It's a neighborhood in Lower Manhattan on the west side. The main street, the main drag, if you will, is called Christopher Street. And there's a walk, a stretch of blocks that the Queens have been walking on for decades. And it's between 7th Avenue. So if you look at a lot of the pictures of the iconic Stonewall Inn, catty corner on the other side of the intersection from the Stonewall Inn is the iconic cigar place. So if you look at a lot of pictures of people who are posing in the West Village, that's where they're at. And it's still there. And the girls will walk and strut their stuff. And whatever they're doing, whatever reason they're strutting is not important. Okay? They're strutting their stuff. And they walk from 7th Avenue West in the direction of Jersey City, New Jersey, where I'm from, to the pier. And the pier has drastically changed since 1969. So just to set the scene so that you can envision it, it used to be really run down, like so many things in New York City. New York City was one of the many cities in the country that after they had their urban rebellions, the people who lived in the places that rebelled got punished by massive and strategic disinvestment. So that was the rise of the ghettos in New York, in not just New York City, but in the United States of America, quote unquote. This is a settler colony. It is illegitimate. It should dissolve itself. It used to be really run down. And the queens that used to hang out there sometimes would live there, would like have to sleep there because they didn't have anywhere else to go, because they didn't have any housing. So thank you, PTU, for being here. Portland Tenants United is an organization that's been fighting for tenants' rights and justice in this town for years, and I'm very grateful that you're here in the city and in this space. So thank you for coming out. So, spoilers, I don't think that your society is worth anything if someone is houseless and doesn't want to be. Like, that's a measure that your society is a failure, is that people cannot sleep inside if they want to. That's how you know. So it's been a pervasive problem for way more than 50 years, but 50 years ago in New York City, the metropolis of the world, there were people who were homeless, and now there are even more. So a lot of those people who were homeless were street queens. The people who were allowed to slip through the cracks so much and become so precarious that they are called street queens, which is how they identify, right? So the people who are like the mothers of the movement, who I'm gonna definitely get into, Sylvia and Marsha, that's how they identified. That was how they identified first, I think says a lot. So there's a lot of hubbub, well, at least in my part of the internet, where people don't want Sylvia and Marsha to be sort of taken into the realm of being transsexuals. Because, you know, a lot of women who are sex workers and are not connected to Tumblr don't know that that's not an okay term to use anymore, that it's like passé. So like a lot of my homegirls who I come from, that's like the lingo that we used. And then I came to Portland and they were like, oh, that's very offensive. So I don't say it anymore. So, you know, now I just say trans and I leave it at that, which I think opens it up a little bit more, because there was some argument about whether or not Sylvia and Marsha should be seen as trans leaders, because they were maybe not trans in the way that we understand it, but they lived here 50 years ago and medicine and science isn't where it was at now. So it's just like not something that is quite understandable. But before Sylvia and Marsha, there are thousands of years that span the globe of people who see themselves as outside of the gender binary that have called themselves a thousand names. So I think that's a little side conversation that I just wanted to bring in for a second, so that people can understand that whatever you want to call them, they were street queens. And give some respect to people who live on the street. So I'm thinking now about, you know, they're replacing boulders in this city. They're putting boulders in the place where flower gardens used to be in order to deter people who need to sleep outside from doing it. And this is Portland, Oregon, 50 years later. And you can imagine that. And if you know these people, you know that there are a lot of trans women who are houseless that do like to sleep amongst the flowers. And they should be able to. Now, they're not going to be able to sleep there at all, because now there are boulders, $1 million worth apparently, to put them there so that they can't sleep there. So 50 years later, across the continent, a very similar situation is how we find ourselves. So let's be, I implore that we please remember that those people are our leaders. And in 50 years, if we're still alive, people will be talking about them. So I love, you know, the nonprofit queens, you know, who have figured out a way not to have to, you know, do survival sex work, and that they've managed to like get jobs at nonprofits, and I want them to be able to get everything that they need. But they know that humbly, I don't believe that they are our future leaders, because they're constricted by the institutions for which they work. A lot of times they are hired to be the DEI, the diversity, equity, and inclusion person. Some might say they're the token,
But now that organization gets to say, we have trans people in our leadership, so don't you ask us about our funders. Mm-hmm. So I want those girls to be, and people in the trans community to be able to get those jobs and get that money. Mm-hmm. And I just want them to humbly understand that because of that constriction that they face, that they're not going to be able to harness the rage that comes specifically from having to endure poverty and state violence. And poverty is state violence. So this is the context from which Sylvia and Marsha spring before they even go into Stonewall on June 28th, 1969. Sometimes they have a place to live, to sleep inside. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they have a place to shower, get changed, do their stuff. Sometimes they don't. It's very stressful. There are documentaries and essays about Sylvia and Marsha that depict what their day-to-day life was. And they interview their friends. Their friends, some of them are still alive. They're very old, but they're still alive. And they talk about what it was like to actually be in community with them. And some of these people talk about how they didn't know where their next meal was coming from. They didn't know where they were going to sleep. They were just always precarious. And that is exactly the situation that we find ourselves in today. There's an economic crisis that's been in effect since 2008. It's the reason that we had an Occupy Wall Street. And if anyone here was a part of Occupy, thank you for participating. Because one of the things that it did was open up the space that we can even talk about poverty and income inequality in a way that recognizes that there's something amiss here. And because that was coming out of a period where there was what they call triumphalism in the 90s, where people were saying the economy is so good. People are opening up businesses and buying homes and things are okay. Pardon me. I grew up in the 90s and it wasn't good because I grew up in abject poverty. I was like a crack baby that managed to live. My parents were addicts and they didn't do a very good job of attending to me. So I was being neglected at home. And then, you know, because I'm trans, I was being harassed at school. Students and administration, by the way. The things that schools do to trans children is incredible. And they did it to me. So a lot's not that different. So I'm 32. This is 16 years ago. And that we're not in a better place for the lowest among us, for the lowest among us, says everything. Because the focus on people who have made it, I think, is part of the root of the problem here. And this is when I go into Marsha and Sylvia. So Sylvia Rivera is also a Puerto Rican woman from New Jersey. And Marsha's from Jersey too. It's interesting that they're both from New Jersey, but they do their political work in New York City because, you know, so many queens leave New Jersey, Connecticut, you know, or anywhere really, to go to New York City in 1969 because, yeah, it's dangerous. You could get mugged. You got to sleep on the street, but at least you're around your people who give about you and they're not going to let you die. So they were there. And when there's one of the first big actions or big demonstrations in what we would now call Pride, but back then they called it Gay Liberation Day, which is interesting that they've changed the name, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they don't call it Gay Liberation. That was the name. It wasn't Pride. That wasn't until later. Pride is something that you can buy into. Mm-hmm. Liberation is a little bit more free, isn't it? So they changed the name, but Sylvia gets on the stage and the stage manager the gatekeeper, right? Who, you know, knew someone who could get an amp and a mic and a stage and a permit, says on the stage today, no blacks, no spics, derogatory for Hispanic, spic, Puerto Rican, read Puerto Rican, because Puerto Ricans are poor, live in New York City, that's where the hate is strongest, because the population is the highest. Sylvia is Puerto Rican, Marsha's black, African American. And no queens, so no blacks, no spics, no queens on the stage. And that's interesting, because Stonewall is fresher in their memory than ours. It's only been a couple of years. And in a couple of years, the movement has managed to be strong and wide enough that people are turning out by the thousands to descend onto the West Village to talk to each other and to be in community with each other and commemorate Stonewall. And yet the people who they know better than we know, because they were probably there, know who made Stonewall happen and why. Of course, the reason was because of repeated and enduring police terrorism on a neighborhood. So who here has been to the West Village, has been to Christopher Street recently? So tell me about it. How is it? Nice, gentrified, sanitary, clean. Clean. You cannot get a condo for less than $1 million. You cannot pay less than $3,000 for a studio. That these things are not within reach. So these are the people that live there. Even 16 years ago, they would call the police once it got dark out and just call the cops on unwanted people, you know, like they do here. The number one reason for emergency calls in this town is for unwanted people. Okay, 50 years later, across the country, here we are. So they call the cops on us just to remove us so that they can get some peace and quiet. You know, because that's why you move to downtown Manhattan, for some peace and quiet. So, you know, the people that make the culture where you're at, because Christopher Street is Christopher Street because of the street queens. What Christopher Street means, street queen, that's where, you know, like that's who made the culture. Now you're literally living on top of the culture in your condo, and you're enjoying it, but until it gets a little too loud, and then you can call the police, and then your covenant with the state goes into effect. And then the police do what they do, which is to maintain the covenant, which is to keep your ass out of the way from the people who paid to be there, and your broke ass didn't contribute a dime. It doesn't matter that you made the culture. Culture is not currency, and you can be removed, and you will be removed. And Sylvia and Marsha were removed. Sylvia tries to get on the stage during the first Pride. She has to take the mic, and she manages to get it. And when she gets it, people begin to boo her. And I'll show you the video. It's stunning. She should be being treated like the champion that she is. And instead, people are booing her. And then you find out why they're booing her when she opens her mouth. Sylvia is furious. She is furious. She says, y'all all are trying to live a white middle class fantasy. That's what y'all are trying to do here. She called it out. It was like a curse. And it's still ringing, because she named what we all see now. The reason that so many of us couldn't even go to Pride. I couldn't go on Sunday. On Saturday, I went for the Trans March. Thank you, Trans Unity. They put on the Trans March every year. Thank you. So we get to the main grounds and the cops are there. And I'm like getting agita. I can't be around them. When I go to actions, I make it clear I can't be the one who says anything to the police. I have to say to my comrades, y'all are my comrades. Some of y'all are here. You know I said this to you. If the police come, please make sure that they don't even speak to me. Because just the police speaking to me or to any of us is meant to strike fear. They do a good job. They can kill you and get away with it. They show you every day. They can kill you and get away with it. So do you want to get close? Do you want to engage in conversation? You better not. So Sylvia and Marsha are just trying to get some R&R and go to Stonewall, which is one of the only places where you can go to if you're a queen in New York City, because low-key, even some of the gay places didn't want the queens, and that's still very present. How many gay places have you been to that they're very hostile to trans women? And it's like, yeah, LGBT, you're right. You hate me. You're as transphobic as like any straight person. Jesus Christ. So Sylvia and Marsha are enduring the same thing, but worse, in New York City in 1969. So they're in the Stonewall Inn, but the Stonewall Inn is run by the mob. It's illegal to be gay in public space in New York City in 1969 and everywhere else in the country too. And what it means that it's illegal is that the place got raided, and that places regularly got raided. And the police would put in a call to the owner to make sure the friends and family, the better customers aren't there. You make sure they're out. We're going to raid because, you know, we have to, and we're going to, you know, get out whoever is in there. And Sylvia and Marsha are like sacrifice people amongst the other sacrificial people. They don't matter. I mean, they're poor. They're not white. They ain't got no money. Like, it's they're queens, whatever. So the police come in and they do their thing. When they pull up, they have a paddy wagon outside. This is regular. What happens, right? So like, imagine the police pull up to the Q Center. You know, imagine in the not very far future when like the fascists are able to turn more people. And then suddenly it's less safe to be at the Q Center. Maybe it even becomes a crime because they can do whatever they want. The end goal of fascism is to have a society where everyone is on board with your program, and whoever isn't, you kill them. So unless you're ready to get on board with fascism, or at least choke down any resistance that you have, you are a target. You might want to fight for the people who are being targeted now because they won't stop. There is no gap. They're ready to fill it in. So if the Q Center is deemed not safe and the police come up, because of course the police will lead the fascists, not just collaborate with the fascists. So they pull up and they're ready to take people in. The regular thing that happened at the Stonewall was exactly that. When you went to the Stonewall or other gay bars, you knew that what was going to happen was that, well, tonight might be the night if the cops come. You know, we'll see what happens. So one of the things that regularly happened every time the police came in was they would tell everybody, all right, nobody can leave, nobody leaves. Everyone get up against the wall. If you appear to be a man, you went over here. If you appear to be a woman, dressed in the clothing of men and women, right, you'd be separated. They'd send in officers to search you. And the rule was you had to have at least 3 items of clothing that coincided with the gender assigned to you. And that would be confirmed by your genitals. So that was the level of indignity from which we all spring. And that we can return to if we're not vigilant, in my opinion. So Sylvia and Marsha are too that night. And they're going to fail. They're going to fail, you know. So that means that you get put in the back of the paddy wagon. You probably get roughed up along the way. You know, in transit. Like Freddie Gray in Baltimore, right? So like, he died in transit. Freddie Gray was one of the people, he's from Baltimore. He was one of the people that got killed and that gave way to the Baltimore uprising. The Baltimore uprising that we should all be learning about, studying from, trying to duplicate. And It was when he was being moved from where he got picked up to going to the jail that he suffered injuries that led to his death. So that was what they did to the queens back then, right? But there were no phones recording, so nobody ever saw that. But there were queens that died in transit to jails in New York City in 1969. Sylvia and Marsha knew that, and they said, oh no, not tonight. Oh, we're not doing this. And they participated in a fight back because they were sick and tired of it. And they were brave, and they used their rage and channeled it to a vision, a common vision, which is, you know, what you do when you're oppressed. But this happened to catch on, right? There's always resistance happening. Sometimes it catches on, sometimes it doesn't. That night it caught on, and people fought back. They felt brave, and they wanted to fight back against the cops. And they pushed the cops out forcefully. And the next night, and the next night, and the next night, it wasn't just them. People from all over New York City came to say, oh, it's popping off. Let's go. People went into action. And it's important to note that two of the groups that went into action were the Black Panthers and the Young Lords Party, revolutionary organizations for Black and Puerto Rican people, respectively, that showed up for Black and Puerto Rican queens. That, of course, you know, we're all meant to believe that these groups were, you know, deeply misogynistic and sexist. And of course, those elements are there. That's how men are. And but in terms of the politics of the day were toward liberation. The reason that the Gay Liberation Front, which was the group that put on Gay Liberation Day, the reason they called themselves that because they saw themselves as situated in a political moment globally. The resistance of people in Vietnam that were fighting against the U.S. military, the greatest purveyor of violence in the world. Mm-hmm. That's Martin Luther King, by the way. The U.S. military is the greatest purveyor of violence. That's why he died when he had a approval rating that was in the 20s. He was not always the angel that they've made him to be. He was deeply unpopular because of his anti-war views. And so was the Gay Liberation Front. So it's bad enough that you all are a bunch of queens and butches or whatever the words, you know. It's bad enough. Now you're trying to situate yourself with these people who were trying to obliterate and put under our thumb. Now you're aligning yourselves with the people who are fighting against or resisting us. How dare you? So the Black Panthers, the Young Lords Party, and other revolutionary formations knew this and said, gays and lesbians, street queens, the whole bit, they're an oppressed group. And therefore, they should be supposed to be there for each other because the enemy's attacking them and, you know, they're coming for you next. So this is the political context in 1969 in New York City, in the West Village, in the Stonewall Inn, that gave way to this fight back. Because, of course, the memes, and we all love them, the memes say Stonewall was a riot, and it was, but how did the riot come to be? So this is why I want to just have a community session, because I've read ad nauseum and I just want to get it out. Since there's nothing else happening in town, we'll do it on the 50th anniversary. And thank you for being here. So Marsha P, and the P stands for pay no mind. Because it was like her mantra. And mantra is the right word. They say Marsha was really spiritual, actually. And part of her spiritual practice was giving flowers to people on the street if they seemed a little sad. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? You don't even know where you're going to sleep. And when you get a dollar, you buy flowers. And you give them to people who seem sad. Oh my God. Like, she's an angel. So they say that, you know, they called it like the angel of Christopher Street. Because, like, the patron saint. Now she's an angel. The patron saint of Christopher Street. because of her contributions to society. You know, like the police make none. She made a lot, you know. So she's going through all of this, and then they say that like her fighting against the police is like out of character. But they say that Sylvia was the influence on Marcia that she needed, because Marcia said, pay it no mind. Oh, whatever. We'll live another day. There's always tomorrow. Little quip she'd say to cope, because we have to cope. Figure out a way to like not want to die constantly, right? You know death is near. I know death is near. I've been thinking about it constantly, like every hour on the hour. But there's a difference between knowing that death is near and wanting to die. And like Marcia figured out a way to want to live even if she knew death was right here. And that's very important. But they say Sylvia was a and they're like, Sylvia would go off on you if you looked at her the wrong way. It's a little familiar, I know. So, you know, so she would be in Marcia's ear, and they were like a nice, you know, like balance to one another, and they were best friends. And they started this thing called the Star House, STAR, Street Transvestite Action Revolutionaries. And of course, we hear transvestite, we cringe. But, you know, that was the lingo. Okay, so like, get over it. It changes. It's changing now. Like, thank God it's changing, right? Like, non-binary people are in the trans community. Stop gatekeeping trans identity. I love you, but like, you know, let's get the word out. Okay. So it was very, like, simply, wherever they got a place to stay, they would like squat. Because there were a lot of like abandoned apartments in New York City back then. Not like now, right? The abandonment was part of the process to get those prices real, real low so you can buy a whole block or a building, you know, whatever you'd want. Like Jared Kushner, you know, like the president's son-in-law, like the person that's making multinational deals now with the Saudi government, the one that got in trouble because of some of the other stuff he was doing, the Russian oligarchs. Like this all is here, and I'm just trying to like get it all here for everybody, okay? So like he's one of the people that has some of the most property in Manhattan. And I'm sure he owns properties on Christopher Street. And in 1969, it just looked different. You can look at the pictures, but from what I understand, it just doesn't quite capture what it was like. They say the smell of New York City. That you, like, think about that. Like when you look at a picture of somewhere that looks run down and dirty, it has a smell too. Okay, so this is what's happening. Marcia and Sylvia get in wherever they can, and as soon as they find a place, whether it's in downtown Manhattan or across the East River in Brooklyn, wherever they live is the Star House. It's not one place. It's like wherever they can stay without being evicted. And it was where you could go so that you wouldn't have to sleep on the pier if you didn't want to. And you could just have a roof over your head, maybe get a shower and some food. Because they understood, like, this really is all we got. None of us should be hoarding it. So, like, don't be a stingy queen. So they start the Star House. And most of the people who come in are girls that get out of jail. Because when you go to jail, and here we are back in Portland again, and sweeps. If you go to jail and you don't have a residence, whatever is on you, the police take it. And they'll give you back whatever they feel like giving you back. And they'll throw the rest away. And that's what happens 50 years later across the country. Here we are in Portland. People get swept every day. I've seen sweeps with my own eyes, and I told Ted Wheeler to his face, Mr. Millionaire Mayor, when we had a budget hearing where he was proposing that the police get more money, and that the, of course, that the, he didn't, of course he didn't say stop the sweeps. Of course not. The sweeps will worsen under him. And I was lucky enough and fortunate enough to be with Comrades. Again, Critical Resistance, thanks a lot for collecting the tickets and making sure that people who need to be heard get up there. Because I had something to say to Wheeler. Much like, you know, people who are in the trenches that have no money, that have no clout, that could never get a job at a legit place if they wanted to, those are exactly the people who people should be listening to. So I am like, I told Wheeler to his face that a sweep is the most disturbing thing that I've seen since coming to this city. I've seen a lot of disturbing in this town. Nothing compares to watching someone get everything that they own snatched from them violently by a police officer who takes their stuff and puts it in a van. Like, they have almost nothing, and now you're making sure they have nothing, less than nothing, because now they're in jail, and when they get out, if you don't give them back their stuff, they have less than what they started with. And they call this a deterrent. I'm just like, you people are so profoundly sick. And I think Ted Wheeler is profoundly sick. Sylvia and Marsha, again, they're dealing with this, but it's so much worse. And they realize that no one's going to help the girls unless they step in and do it. So they initiate this program. And after Stonewall hit and people around the globe, and they're calling themselves the Gay Liberation Front. And, you know, that's meant to scare people and make them hate the movement. Regardless, the movement catches traction. It even got traction in Portland, Oregon. There was a formation of the Gay Liberation Front in Portland, Oregon that started in 1971. And one of the people who started it is still alive. His name is Jamie Partridge. So, yeah. So, like, if you see Jamie, give him a pat on the back and tell him, like in the 1970s, the things that they were able to get on people, it's worse now. Thank you so much, my lovely FBI agent. I love you. COINTELPRO never ended, so be safe. COINTELPRO is the counterintelligence program. And it was an FBI, it's an FBI program specifically designed to target left-wing activists to destroy their movements from the inside out. So, you know, be safe. And it's meant to sow discord among activists and disassemble solidarity, which is hard to come by. And if you can disassemble the solidarity, then the movement has no power. So this is the impact that these two street queens are already having. Like in the years after Stonewall. Like, this is their baby. Like, they sacrificed. They sacrificed before they ever stepped into Stonewall that night. Of course, it wasn't just that night. They sacrificed before and they continue to sacrifice after. Both of them died broke. Sylvia and Marsha died broke. So, like, yes, share their images, but, like, please remind people of that fact. That, like, there's something there about not caring for people who sacrifice everything because they didn't have it anyway, so maybe they won't miss it. So let's not contribute to them and let's give money to HRC or something. Mm-hmm. So there's the, and then HRC makes it a point to keep them out. Trust me, they don't work with me, okay? I'm gonna leave it broad for now. So this is the impact that they're having in the immediate period after Stonewall happens. And it's very tumultuous because people are trying to grab at whatever they can. So the West Village becomes very, very politicized, more than it already was. Now it's more open because guess what? We had a full-on urban rebellion. So that's a show of power. And it, and we're saying you cannot come into our space. The next day, the cops would print their names and their workplaces in the paper. And you can go in the archives and see it for yourself. There was a page of social deviants that would be listed in the paper for everybody to see. And of course, this is a time where everybody reads the paper. Like, everybody goes on social media now. Everybody read the paper back then. So, like, people saw ya. And you'd lose your job, you'd lose your family, and you'd have to figure out some other stuff. No matter how much money you had, which is interesting. You know, like, if you didn't have the cash on you at the moment to bribe the cop, your name was going. And people lost their careers. But it's worth noting that these are the people who ended up seizing the mantle of Gay Liberation Day, the Gay Liberation Front, the Pride Movement as we know it, because they had resources. So again, I talked about earlier, like, it's things as simple as we have access to an amp, a stage, we can get a permit, we can do all these. It's exactly like today. It's the reason that Trans Pride is humble and community-based and doesn't look like the cop-riddled corporate nightmare at the main grounds. So it's like it's still here, 3,000 miles away, 50 years later. So they're not able to assemble their forces the way that they should because they don't have resources. The people who have resources are the people that actually got off pretty easy, that didn't go to jail because they had on the right clothes, because they're cis gays, right? So cis gays didn't go to jail. You got your name written down, and I suppose, you know, I don't know what the exact legal system was like, but maybe there was something like a three strikes, you're out kind of thing. But you kind of got off with a slap on the wrist if you had on the right clothes. If you had on the wrong clothes, then you know you'd be going to jail. So that's profiling trans people and allowing cis gays to, like, continue to see another day, to, like, go home and sleep in their beds instead of in a cell and then tossed out on the street. So I just want to bring this in because, of course, this is sort of where we begin to take off. And to me, this is the call to where we need to go. And then I'll let you go. And please be thinking about anything you have to say. Like, write it down because I want to hear from everybody if you got something to say. So now Sylvia takes the stage. This is that Gay Liberation Day, what would then become Pride. She has to take the mic. She has to scream in the mic. She has to call out the whole thing for what it is, which, by the way, is very exhausting. Because when everybody just wants to have a good time, like, this is a good crowd. You're here for, like, the right reasons. Thank you. But, like, I just came from a retreat. Here's my bags. Like, I got dropped off here. I was at an environmental justice retreat in the woods. And I won't mention the organization because it's not decent. But some of the people who were there were, like, operatives of the Democratic Party of Oregon. The Democratic Party of Oregon that doesn't make contributions to grassroots activists. They'll offer you a job that they can take away from you if you get out of line. And that's about what they're willing to give street queens today. But they were there. It is very difficult. I did it. It was very difficult to say the thing that everyone is collectively and consciously ignoring because they just want to have a good time, which, not to give in to, like, you know, localism, you know, because that lends itself to nationalism. So I'm not going to say that New York City is better than Portland, Oregon in this way, but I'll say it's here. They'll just kind of look at you like you're crazy until you look away. That's what I've found. And this is what happens often when I'm saying the thing that needs to be said. So when I'm at an environmental justice retreat at a lovely grounds, by the way. The facility was fabulous. Oh, I ate all the good food. I had a vegan couple of days. I took a lot of lovely hot showers, and I had a wonderful time in the woods. It was gorgeous. Listen to the birds and watch the stars, and it was gorgeous. I walked around in my robe the whole time. I got a terry cloth robe, and I walked around in the terry cloth robe just to show my contempt for these people. You know, because they were like heads of nonprofits and party operatives, and they, you know, they got cloth robe on, and I just like smoked weed outside in front of everybody, and they all see me, and I'm like walking in the session fucking blasted, and I'm just like, but anyway, you know, but it's because I see it for what it is. And I can see that there's political maneuvering happening. And part of that political maneuvering, no matter how well-meaning it is, when you dance with the devil, it doesn't quite matter how woke your language is. Because when you are doing something to put forward, you know, getting some legislator to support your bill, it's not free. It's not like you can just give them the idea and say, go with this, and then they champion it. They need to be coaxed. They need to be coddled. They need to be shown that you are someone that they can depend on. But what they're really doing is asking you to demonstrate to them, and this is my opinion, excuse me. In my opinion, what they're asking you to do is to demonstrate to them that you're ready to play ball, that you're ready to overlook all of the disgusting human rights abuses that they know that they are complicit in or are doing directly to people. They want you to show them that you are okay with that. And that's why they go to these conferences. They're like trolls to make sure that the discussion doesn't get too out of hand. That this nice organization that's under our thumb doesn't take the advice of the Puerto Rican communist trans witch that you also invite because, you know, it's how you show that you're diverse. You need to play ball with them. But here's what. Some legislation that they were hoping to get passed experienced a really bad hiccup in the 11th hour. It happens a lot. 15 now, do you remember 15 now? Mm-hmm. The movement to raise the minimum wage in Oregon. We had someone on board, and this is my event, so I'm saying it. Tina Kotek, okay? That progressive champion was with us every step of the way, or so we thought. 15 now, we're out, we're getting signatures, we're talking about, do y'all remember 15 now? Right, so like we were hitting the streets and we were like doing actions all the time. We were raising the question of poverty wages themselves, whether or not it's acceptable if you're a business owner. I hate this. This small business owner religion. Small business owners, support them at all costs. Small business owners want to become big business owners. They want to get more capital. They want to get more employees. They want to get more political power. Why are we treating them like they're outside of the pale just because they haven't figured out a way to maximize their profits to be the nightmares that we all know are here already? Anyway, okay, so 15 now, we managed to build up enough political support and community support that it actually looks like we can get this thing on the ballot. Because we're getting signatures to get it on the ballot. We're working really hard and we're actually like on our way. And Tina Kotek, the person who we thought was with us, introduced some alternative legislation called Raise the Wage. And this is like history. So I'm like giving you a little history lesson about your own politics. I'm not even from here. And it's called Raise the Wage, and it's a coalition that brings together all the heavy hitters, all the nonprofits, the unions, the ones with the bucks, the ones that are willing to overlook your stuff because, oh, on the whole, you're pretty good. You're better than Republicans, and therefore we'll work. Fine. Listen, I'm not doing it. But if you want to do it, you do it. And suddenly, 15 now was dead overnight. Overnight. And now Raise the Wage, which is less money, over a longer period of time than what we were putting forward is what's on the agenda. And 15 now is cut off at the knees. And this is like the most progressive you can get in Oregon in terms of like electeds at the state level. So like, you know, I'm not saying she's a terrible person and deserves the worst. I'm saying she did a bad thing. So watch it if you're going to report back. So this is like, she wasn't there, but it's like people like that, people close to that are the ones who are at this retreat. And I'm like, so we're going to just keep talking about how unfair it is and never say how it got like this. Nobody's going to say capitalism. Nobody's going to say police terrorism, the US military, war. No. Not this time. And this is very disheartening to me because when I see this, I'm like, the angel and devil appear on my shoulder. And I'm like, should I say the thing that like other people are thinking? Or should I not? And I think this is like something that trans people really have in spades. Like that we know that there is something amiss because we're socialized and told that there's something wrong with us. So like it's like a collective gaslighting. You're not who you say you are. We know better than you, even though you are you. And that, I think that has an effect where when we're experiencing a sort of collective misunderstanding, a conscious misunderstanding, obfuscation of what's really happening, we see it, we know it. It like it's in our bones. So we have to think how we're gonna relate to this. And for me, what it ends up looking like is, should I start screaming or not? Sometimes I don't, but like when I do, it can get really weird. And it got really weird. And it gets really weird. And it's like why I'm doing this, and it's like not a big budget anything, because you know, the people who fund this type of stuff, they weren't knocking on anybody's door to say, let's honor the mothers of Stonewall. Let's do an event. I wasn't gonna do this. I was looking to see if there was something happening already that I would have just been in the audience with y'all. But like, I'm like, nothing? Okay, well then I guess I'll do something. And like, this is what we can do. And if these are like our forces or a part of our forces or represent what our forces look like, then I think it would be a good idea for us to decide what it is politically that we would like to see and figure out how to work with each other to make it happen. And this is when I want y'all to come in and tell me what needs to happen. Because I'm gonna shout out who's here so that you all know in case you came in late. No SROs, PDX. School resource officers, okay. So it's cops in school. No big deal. Except cops are not in schools where there are a bunch of rich kids. They don't go there because it's inappropriate. It's inappropriate for cops to be in schools, but it's not quite as inappropriate for them to be in schools with poor kids somehow. Because you know, those are the future prisoners of America. So get them used to that, because that's what their future is. We're seeing to it. Can you talk about your school?
Okay.
So, this is Sarah from No SROs PDX.
Yeah. I went to... Oh, should I go here?
Come on.
Oh.
Do you want to? If you don't, you don't have to.
Okay. Yes, I will.
Is it on the phone?
Yes. Okay. So, I just graduated like 2 months ago from Jefferson High School. You know, yeah. The school that has the reputation, if you know what I mean. So, Oh, the reputation is that we're a bunch of thugs, that we're ghetto, that bad things happen at Jeff, that fights happen at Jeff, that shootings happen at Jeff, that all of this violent stuff happens there when it's truly just a community. That's what it is. Like, at our graduation, we had a school board member talk, and we had to tell them about, like, what Jeff meant to us and to everybody that's a part of it. They just say community, and everybody on the outside sees that community as dangerous or sees it as what we don't experience, you know? So then, we were just in class, and one of our teachers in senior inc was like, there's this bill that's trying to get passed that means more money for SROs in our school. And for a lot of us, that was the first time even hearing the term SRO. Like, we didn't know who the police officer that was in our school. We just accepted that they were there, you know? But our teachers really gave us the knowledge we needed to form our own opinions and to share that opinion with the school board. So we set up meetings, and we went to the school board, literally almost all Jeff kids, because apparently they went to all the other PPS schools and had meetings with them, but no one else was as we knew we were gonna get attacked through this, because that's how historically it has been at Jefferson High School. So we grouped together, and we went to the school board, and we had it on lock. We really thought we had it on lock. We called in ahead of time to get spots so we could speak to the school board, and like crafted pieces, multiple pieces of writing that had everybody's opinions on them about why they feel that it needs to be delayed, at least delayed. That's what we were talking about, because we students were not a part of the conversation until it had already, like, it was about to be passed. So they hadn't even asked us how we felt about this situation before it was gonna happen. So we were just saying, please delay it. Like, please, we are the students that you're supposed to be representing, delay it. And it was the most I got cut off. Like, they cut the microphone off on me. And some members on the board said some things that they should not have said, period. And they did not vote to delay the vote. Like, there were like 30 kids there waiting, and they each said their piece, and they chose to not delay it. And I cried a lot. But then what happened after that? And then we were like, this isn't okay. We didn't stop. We had to stop doing it at school because they had to move on the curriculum, you know. But students were like, no, like, we're not going to accept this no as an answer. What people kept telling us is that just because they said no the first time doesn't mean we need to stop. Because for a lot of people did drop off because they were like, they said no, what else can we do? But then a couple of us were like, we know what we can do. And then we started organizing and got people from different schools. And then we met with Alyssa. We got Critical Resistance in here. Like, everybody was there to help support us so we could keep trying to, we like made it a movement and everything. And I believe we got it delayed. Yeah, it got delayed. But then they did some sneaky stuff. And then, yeah, we got it delayed, and we sparked a really good conversation about getting more schools like Jefferson in communication with the school board, because we had meetings with them, and we straight up said, we don't feel represented. For you, my sister went to Jeff before I went to Jeff, and she warned me. She was like, the school board is not your friend. They're not your friend. They're never going to be your friend. And so we told that to their face, that that's how we feel about them, and that's not okay. Especially for schools like Jeff, you know? Anyway, so yeah, that's what we did at the end of this year. And it was honestly a really nice, like, senior legacy to leave behind on the rest of the kids at Jeff. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're amazing.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place July 4th through 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. The Waterfront Blues Festival is the largest blues festival west of the Mississippi. The festival features more than 100 performances on 4 stages, including the Robert Cray Band, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, Trombone Shorty, and Vintage Trouble. There will also be workshops, cruises on the Willamette River, activities for kids, after-hour jams, fireworks, and more. Again, that's the 32nd Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, July 4th through 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Stop the Hate, Saturday, June 29th at noon at Chapman Square in Portland. On Saturday, June 29th, the Proud Boys Hate Group is planning to gather in downtown Portland, looking for targets for violent attacks. This can mean assaulting random pedestrians, looking for progressive activists to attack, or targeting community events. Those against white supremacy and fascists will gather to defend our community against this racist political violence. Again, that's Stop the Hate, Saturday, June 29th at noon at Chapman Square, 210 Southwest Main in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
It's just after 8 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland.